Welcome to The Parent Equation with me, Aisha Murray, the podcast series where working parents share their unique stories of raising a family alongside their careers. The conversations I'm privileged to have are inspiring, uplifting, emotive, and most of all, honest. So I hope you enjoy listening as much as I enjoy recording them. So today on The Parent Equation, I'm joined by Jen Smollett. Jen is a women's leadership coach who specialises in confidence and a mum of two. So welcome, Jen. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So let's open the floor with women's leadership coach is a very specific career choice for you. Mm-hmm. What led you to that in the first place? So a bit about maybe your previous career mm-hmm. and then what drove you to sort of following this new passion path, we should call it.
Yes, passion path. I like that. I like that a lot. So my previous career was, I was previously a nurse, a children's intensive care nurse, and I loved it. When I was on the floor, we lived in London before and I worked in a very busy cardiac children's intensive care and I loved it. I loved the busyness of it, the intenseness of it, the pace, the speed. I loved all of it. And quite quickly, I moved into education. So on children's cardiac intensive care still, I developed a program to bring newly qualified nurses, so straight out of university, into intensive care, which is not the done thing all around. It's starting to become more common now, but it wasn't then. So I created a program which was to educate them and support them. So very much, I didn't realize it then, but I know it now. I was coaching them through their first steps in their journey to becoming a children's intensive care nurse. Mm-hmm. So I did that for a few years and just loved it. And then my wife and I moved out of London. And so we needed to find somewhere that had a cardiac center that was quite close to both of our families. Mm-hmm. And when I did that, I realized that nursing outside of London is very different to nursing in London. Yeah. And the place that I went to work at, I went for a role. I couldn't go for just an educator role on the intensive care. It just wasn't a thing at that time. It now is, which I'm very happy to say, but it wasn't at the time. So I went as a ward sister, stroke educator. So it was a leadership position on the children's intensive care. Yeah. And sadly, just quite quickly fell out of love with it, with nursing, with nursing leadership, with the NHS as a whole. Mm-hmm. And whilst I was falling out of love, I fell on a coaching program to become a qualified coach. And honestly, I thought that I was going to do this coaching and it was going to enhance my leadership and I was going to progress as a nurse leader. And I did the course. And the first day they said to us, OK, so you need some people, you know, to practice on. You need coachees to get used to coaching and what coaching is. And then one of them said, you know, you could use this as a way to start promoting your business. And it was like something went off in my head. And I was just like, what? You can do this? Just do this? This is amazing. So that was it. Like that was in 2017. And it was literally from that moment, I was like, okay, this is what I have to make happen.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that very specifically was actually what I had started to love. It wasn't the nursing anymore. It was the intensive care, but it was the education of intensive care and the knowledge of intensive care rather than the actual doing of it for me. That became my plan. So that's what I did. So I qualified. I finished the qualification. And then, as you know, you don't just decide to start a coaching business and all the people come to you saying, please coach me.
Probably not. No. Any business, I think.
Exactly. It is what I thought was going to happen. So I gave my notice in of my job. I'd kind of, to be honest, I had burnt out. I was completely overwhelmed, lacking in confidence, not believing I had the ability to do what I really wanted to do. So I'd stepped away and I actually went into a different role as a lead for education for a nursing agency. So outside of the NHS.
Yeah.
And I did that role for a year alongside starting to build up my own business. And then, after a year, I still wasn't, my coaching business wasn't profitable at that point still, you know, two years in. But my wife very supportively allowed me to leave the full-time role and focus on my business. Now, I say very supportively. She was supportive. But as a nurse, you can also do agency nursing. So you can pick up nursing and you can drop off nursing. You can do shifts, you can drop them.
Yeah, yeah.
So I decided to do agency nursing alongside building my business. Mm-hmm. And that's my long story, I suppose. Very long story into becoming a coach. And now this is me full time. This is what I do. Yeah.
Lots of questions came to mind as you were talking about all that. The first question was, or is, when you made that move from leaving the NHS or deciding you wanted to leave the NHS, did you have children at that point or was it pre-children? So it wasn't it wasn't influenced at that point by sort of work-life balance or the family balance?
No, not at all. No. So the children have come along for me after I had made the decision to leave nursing, which honestly is a really good thing because I really struggled. I've actually left the nursing register, so I'm no longer a registered nurse at all. And the identity change for me was huge. I feel like I've lost a part of my identity and I really struggled with that. And I think if we think about the identity we have as a parent as well and how our identity changes when we become a parent, I feel like it was good that I did that pre-children.
And separately.
Yes. Not good that I made the right choice, but just, you know, it was lucky.
Identity things, as you say, identity thing as a parent without changing careers or changing jobs is big enough anyway. Yeah. I have tons of conversations with working mums who say, since I had my children, I don't know who I am anymore.
Yes.
My identity is completely different. I'm not quite sure what it is or how to find it or how to deal with all of this.
Yes.
But then if you pile on a career change,
yeah,
on top of that, and you did it at the same time, that would, I could see how that would be quite overwhelming.
Yes.
Yeah. And do you think then your headspace was clearer because you've made the career change?
Yeah.
And then you had, I suppose, more mental capacity to take on the thought of having children.
Yeah, definitely. And I think you're right, because I've also had lots of those conversations as well with working mums or with parents. And I think there's something about actually allowing yourself the time and the space to explore what it is that you want and what you need, which is obviously what you do with your coaching clients as well. But I think for me, coaching is that, you know, already. So I'd already done the figuring out of me. So for me as a parent, I know who I am already. I've kind of done it pre-parenting, which is fortunate again. But I feel like, I know what my identity is. And coaching for me is a burning desire within me. You know, I can't not do it. Even when it was making me no money and I was working all the hours, it's like, what else can I do? And I start looking for jobs, et cetera, et cetera. And there is nothing else that is going to kind of do that for me.
and that's why you know what your purpose is.
Yeah.
And you have found your purpose, your calling, your whatever you want, whatever name or label you want to give to it.
Absolutely.
You've found your purpose. And I think when you find your purpose and your calling, then you can, whatever distractions come in the way, whatever obstacles you come up against, like earning no money for however long it takes, those you can tackle them. It's not easy, obviously it's not easy, but you can tackle them knowing that you're absolutely on the right path
for
you, and you're not going to be thrown off, and you're going to keep going to really make it work for you.
Yeah.
So then when you work with women in the sort of leadership capacity and confidence building capacity, how do you help them find that purpose and that true calling? Because it's very difficult, is what many of us are looking for. So what works for you when you're working with the ladies like that?
So that's a great question. And I often, what I find is interesting, because we're talking about this and I've allowed this conversation and for me to say, yes, I found my purpose, and I have. But I think for me, I like to think of it less about kind of meaning and purpose, because I think that they are talked about so frequently that we start to believe that it's not possible for us to have. And so it becomes something that's much further away. And so I kind of I like to talk about it in terms of living a values-based life,
yeah.
which is based on the principles of acceptance and commitment therapy. Mm-hmm. If anybody listening to this wants to learn more about that, you can Google Russ Harris, you can read The Happiness Trap, and they are great resources for this. But value-based living, so rather than goals-based living, mm-hmm. so rather than wanting my purpose in the future, for example, mm-hmm. actually every day I live my life in a way that matters most to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I do a lot of exploration around what your values are, what truly matters to you.
Yeah.
And coaching matters to me, but actually more than anything, compassion, connection, generosity,
yeah.
they are nurturing. They are my values. And that's why coaching is what I want to do.
Yeah.
But those are my values. And yeah. so then I apply those to my relationships. I apply it to my parenting as well as to my coaching and every other area.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that for me is what I focus on. And I focus on that with women in leadership as well. And then I also focus on what their strengths are. And then I also look at what in their role, in their leadership role and the company that they work for matches with their values and matches with their strengths.
Mm-hmm.
And then they create meaning in the role that they're doing. So for example, as a leader, as a people leader, actually, if you value connection and you value compassion, then you bring that meaning to the conversations that you have on a daily basis.
Yeah.
That's the meaning and purpose that we found right there, rather than feeling it's something outside
yeah.
of us.
Yeah, I know what you mean. And I probably say purpose too often. but you saying that, it's right. Because when a word is overused,
mm-hmm.
to your point, it feels like something unattainable,
yes.
potentially. But also then, it feels like if you're not anywhere near it, then you're a failure.
Yes,
and your exactly. failure at reaching this divine purpose that is mm-hmm. this huge, big, you know, sort of again, sort of at the top of a mountain somewhere that you can't yes. reach. Whereas I completely believe in what you're saying about the values-led lifestyle and how every day, I suppose every, and your values inform every decision mm-hmm. you make, every choice okay. you make, every conversation yeah. you have, every conversation you decide not to have.
Yes, yes.
Should be influenced by
yep.
your values and what you really stand for.
Yeah.
So then when a female leader comes to you, mm-hmm. a woman leader comes to you, and they go through the exercises with you and they go through the values and they are comfortable and confident in what they stand for, what their values are,
yeah.
and then they realize that the role they're in or the company they're in
mm-hmm.
actually doesn't align at all
yeah.
to those values, and that's maybe what's been creating the issue for them, what happens then? Because obviously it's easy to say, right, it's not working for you, that company's not right for you anymore, sack it off. But it's not that simple, is it? So what's the next part of that conversation?
Well, it's an interesting question, because in all honesty, this is what I think puts some people off exploring their purpose mm. and their passion, because
yeah.
they think that they're going to have to make a big change,
yeah.
like end a relationship, you know, change their career, etc., etc. And actually, in my experience, and I don't know if this is because maybe you and I, you know, we all attract different people, don't we? But the women that I've attracted in terms of leadership coaching haven't actually found that they need to move their career.
Okay.
What they've actually yeah. done is reconnected to themselves and reconnected to their career.
Yeah.
So it's interesting, because I actually don't know the answer to the question, mm-hmm. because my experience so far hasn't been that. It's actually been reconnecting themselves, yeah. finding meaning in their role and creating more meaning in mm-hmm. their role as well. So, for example, one person who really values nurture and supporting of others, she, just thinking of one person, I'm sure she wouldn't mind me sharing, but she became a mental health first aider at work. So yeah. she created more meaning. And then she also yeah. was starting to develop more kind of working groups within the organization to focus on culture and engagement
yeah.
within the company.
Yeah.
So it's more for the women that I work with. It's mm-hmm. actually kind of using what they know about themselves mm-hmm. and using that to find meaning in the role that they're in
yeah.
already, as opposed to leaving. But I do think what you've just said, I think you've probably had the experience of that
I have. I think actually your view on it is really interesting, because it's not, I mean, the company might not be the right company. You know, there are plenty
it might
of companies
not, yes.
out there that aren't necessarily right for you. But
yeah.
if, let's assume it is the right company overall, but you're not feeling like you're getting enough from your role or from whatever it is, then as you say, it's not as black and white as saying it's not right for me.
No.
Therefore, I'm going to change role, change career, change company, change whatever. As you say, it's bringing something. It's thinking, what can I bring to this? How can I make it work for me?
Yeah.
And a good example actually is John Lewis, who I'm actually recording them next week for the podcast.
Ah.
So Becky and Leanne run the Working Parents Network at John Lewis
mm-hmm.
as a side to their normal day jobs.
Yeah.
And that was because, you know, obviously brings a huge wealth of meaning, of value, of camaraderie, of support to the working parents within John Lewis. And that is a entirely standalone function that they're doing for the love and the passion of doing it, which for them yeah. and obviously brings a great deal of meaning to their mm-hmm. wider role, because it's yeah. more than just the sort of 9 to 5. So I don't know
exactly
the history of that, but where they created themselves or what history, but it's that kind of thing, isn't it? It's what mm-hmm. can you bring into your role, into your company or into your team
to
align better with your values and really bring all that to the table.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, there is a conversation, and I agree with you, to come back to the point, there are times when the company you work for doesn't align with your values, mm-hmm. or even the people that you work so closely with don't align with your values that yeah. make it difficult for you to stay. Yeah. So yeah, I don't want to suggest that. I'm also suggesting you have to stay either. I'll always support you to make the right decision.
Yeah.
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 My there experience
are options.
So far. Exactly.
Yeah. And then I suppose it's kind of probably the wrong question, but I'll ask it anyway, because you weren't in the NHS nursing when you had the kids, obviously. So it's now yeah. your life as a self-employed business owner
mm-hmm.
has always been with the children.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel as a mum, as a working mum, working for yourself, having the stresses that running your own business entails, yeah. etc., and being able to be present and flexible, etc., with the kids? How does that work for you?
I think it works amazingly, actually. I feel very, very, very fortunate. Mm. Very fortunate. I think it's interesting because, you know, the 4th of January came round and I was ready for the kids to go back to school for me to
get on.
Exactly. Yeah. But it's interesting you say we all were, because that's a wonderful thing. And I know I'm going slightly off topic here, but as a mum, I thought that I didn't want to be a working mum. I thought I wanted to be a stay at home mum. That was always my plan.
Yeah, yeah.
In fact, I say it was always my plan. It was also my wife's plan. So we had to come up with a different plan because someone had to go to work. But we both, thought that we would want to be that stay-at-home mum.
Okay.
So actually this feeling of them wanting them to go back to school brings up a little bit of guilt in me, because I think, gosh, I'm supposed to want to be off with them. I'm supposed to want to, you know, extend the holiday.
Mm.
So yeah, thank you for saying that we all did, because I didn't think we all did.
I think Christmas in particular,
yeah, maybe
it's a very different type of holiday to mm-hmm. any other holiday in the school year. Because it is so, and COVID aside, it's yeah. so intense, because there is so much going on. The kids' excitement levels are up here, obviously, regardless of their yeah. age. The chocolate consumption is up here, well, isn't my family.
Yeah.
All the special chocolates come out. Ferrero Rocher comes out and Terry's chocolate orange, which you only ever have once a year. It's really bizarre.
It's such a Christmas chocolate.
So everything's just up here. The alert levels are just really high.
Yeah,
later nights, and there's just lots more going on, whereas other holidays just haven't got that level of intensity. So
yeah.
I think it's such an intense period, and usually, I mean, my husband's off the whole period, which again is unusual in holiday times. He's normally working. So everyone's together, everything's going on, all the animals are there, all the family there, it's all, you know. So when they go back to school,
yes,
it really is an absolute, I mean, the shoulders just go yes. down when that door closed
yeah.
on the 4th of January, whenever it was. And
yes.
I think that's why. It's just, and everybody needs a break
yes.
from each other
yes.
after that kind of intensity. Whether you know, want to be a stay-at-home mom or not, everyone, there's only so much everybody
yeah.
that anyone can take
yeah.
in yeah. the period of time.
Definitely. I agree. And I think for me as well, there is, in the work that I do, you know, in when I want to share, when I want to write content, I mean, I have struggles around that, but actually that element for me, the learning, the understanding around the psychology of people and how we work and all of that, it really meets a need in me for learning and kind of that information piece that was just missing over the Christmas period, you know, and I loved the Christmas period. I don't want to complain about it. It's, you know, one of my favorite times of year. But I think there was definitely that piece for me as well. I wanted that. I can't think of the right word to describe it, but, you know, there was something there that I needed to have.
Yeah.
And it was that learning and that development for myself.
Yeah. I think that's, you know, it's perfectly natural, and the guilt's natural too. But I think from what you're saying, the reason you work is to fulfill these various different needs that you have.
Yeah, which
in turn will then make you into a better mum. Of course it will.
Yes.
Makes you into a better mum, better person. And also the work you're doing as a coach, obviously I'm going to say this, but anyway, is helping others, dramatically impacting other people's lives.
Huge.
And for the better.
Yeah.
So you're adding real value to those around you.
Yeah.
As well as fueling your own passions, as well as, you know, keeping yourself energised, which of course is going to pass through into the kids and into the, you know, into their happiness.
Yeah.
So no guilt needed on that front.
Thank you. And yeah, I completely and utterly agree with everything you've just said there. And I think I just feel like it is just, for me, it is the best thing. It ticks all of the boxes. And that's having a coaching business and not necessarily just the coaching, but that is, it ticks all the boxes. And then I have the flexibility of being able to, you know, my daughter's nativity play, I went to both of them, you know, the Thursday and the Friday.
Well, that's brave.
Because I don't know why I did because she wanted someone there. It mattered to her. And so I could be there and, you know, I can look ahead and I can see my diary and they've got an inset day and I can plan it off. You know, I can pick them up and drop them off every day. I can be there for everything that matters to them. I can be there for, and that matters to me as well. You know, that's important for me. My nurturing of them matters, and having my own business allows me to do that. It's when there's COVID and we have to homeschool that it all goes out the window.
I know, well,
because then it changes for
that's
all
fair
of
enough.
Us. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
So can we talk about the kids briefly? And it's not, you know, it's not the purpose of this podcast to dwell on in anyone's particular personal scenarios, but I think it was interesting for a lot of people who are potentially going through the same journey. Mm-hmm. So your kids are both adopted. And it'd be really interesting, again, maybe people who are thinking about going down that route or are already in the process. And I haven't been down that route, so I, you know, I can't offer any thoughts on it. But just from your personal experience, how did, I suppose it's a bit of a stupid question, how did it feel for you? Is what I mean, but how did it work for you? How, I suppose, think about other people. What tips could you give to people maybe going down the same route that would ease their path?
That's a really good question, and it's floored me. I'm trying to think of what would ease the path. I think for me, expectations is something that I coach in leadership as much as anything else as well. And I think we all could use, you know, a dose of expectation check in all areas of our lives. Mm-hmm. But I think adoption, allowing yourself the space to be kind to yourself, and this probably applies to all parenting, to be honest. I'd say the same for any parent. Allowing yourself the space and the grace to be good enough, to not be the best. Allow yourself the grace again to have a longer period off work, if that is at all possible for you. So my wife took adoption leave and I took leave as well. So because I work for myself, I could just do that. It was unpaid, but it was still... And I think parenting brings challenges, being a new parent brings challenges, and adoption brings added challenges on top of that.
Yeah.
And I guess my best advice actually is to plan as much as possible to have as much time off work as possible before you go back, because the transition to becoming an adoptive parent is huge. And it was, I knew this, and it was still way bigger than I thought it was going to be. So I don't know that that's going to ease anybody's path. But hopefully later it will. Yes.
Being ready for what's going to come.
Yeah.
And being ready for that to happen, and not letting it floor you when it happens.
Yeah.
And I guess also from your point, I mean, having children anyways, the decision to have children, whenever you make that decision, and then whatever path you go on,
yeah,
it has to be about communication with your partner.
Yeah.
And about what's right for you as a family, what mm-hmm. which routes you might have to take over others, depending on your personal circumstances, etc. It's all kinds of scenarios that come up. But I guess being an adoptive parent, because there is so much process, and I mean a sort of admin process to go through, isn't there, before
yeah.
you even get to sort of maybe the light at the end of the tunnel, it feels like yes. other stories I've heard that yeah. it's a very long process yeah. and complicated and intensive process you have to go through. Yeah. So I guess you have to work as a team, you know, partner yeah. to get through that. Because that in itself, before you even get to the adoption point,
yeah.
must be hugely overwhelming, tiring and stressful.
Yes, absolutely. It is. And we were renovating our house at the same time as going through the process, because again, expectations, we thought we could just do it all.
Yeah.
And actually, yeah, it's intense and it's hard. It's hard. It's very, very hard. And yeah, you need each other. And then becoming a parent is harder in a different way.
Yeah.
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 And how do you and your wife work now? So from a childcare sharing perspective, from because I think you both, mm-hmm. I think you said to me before, you both work from home.
Yes.
As many of us are anyway, obviously at the moment. Yeah. And you both have full-time, full-on roles.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you manage that together? So more with you and her, more as the sort of team dynamic, how does that work?
Yeah. So interestingly, it's changed, changed quite a lot. It's taken a big bit of communication between us, but yeah, both of us were working from home pre-COVID. So we kind of have always known that this was going to be the case for us. My wife works full-time for a company. So she's a nurse, but she's a nurse, a regional clinical lead. So she works in the community overseeing the care of children, but she doesn't do the care herself anymore. So her role is 9 to 5 and she's contracted to 9 to 5. So she has to work 9 to 5. Yeah. But at the same time, it is a company that she works for, which is flexible in the sense of she's able to take the girls to school.
Yeah.
And if I had something come up, I don't plan to do coaching at those times, but if something came up, there was something that I really wanted to attend, you know, at pickup, then she can do that
yeah.
too.
Yeah.
And that is amazing, actually, because I recognize that that's a very different circumstance to what most people have. And it also means that although I kind of clock off to pick the girls up and then I don't work kind of when they're at home and they first come home, but she's also around in that time. So if she's not on a call or she's not answering a call, she can be flexible and kind of drop it, as it were, for work to come and be with the girls and then go back to her work later on in the evening if she needs to and be flexible. So we're very fortunate, and mostly now I take on the responsibility that the kind of pick up and drop off is mine, the organizing is mine, but often she will say, you know, let me do it. And actually she's taking the girls to school every day this week so far because she's just like, let me do it, you've got a full day, you know, let me do it. And that's amazing. But yeah, that's been a switch because she was off on adoption leave for a year mm-hmm. and I was working full-time 9 to 5 and she was doing, you know, the housework, everything. And then she went back to work and I was like, but I still want to work full time. And so that was a huge, huge step for me to take on the mental load, you know, to take on the not being the one being around for tea and looking after the girls when they came home from school. And a part of me didn't want to.
Okay.
And so I think that made it even harder.
Yeah.
But we're coming out the light, you know, coming out into the light now of kind of having found our groove in that. But there was a lot of resentment, you know, between the two of us that we had to go through, you know, resenting not having the mental load or resenting not having time to work, you know, all sorts of resentment that we had to work our way through.
Yeah. And it's all about
and pull.
Obviously it's about compromise, but I suppose when you have kids, it can't all be done.
No.
As in maybe it can, but there were ways of getting it all done, but then maybe you have to get external help in, you have to make different choices, which is what works for a lot of people.
Yeah.
But there comes a point where you have to let go of that resentment and say, actually, just how does this all work now? What does this new jigsaw look like?
Exactly.
With these kids in the mix and their requirements and their needs and our needs, and make sure everyone's basic needs are met.
Yes.
Whatever those needs are, each person will be very different.
Yeah.
I mean, my family, my husband is a complete gym head, gym bunny. And if he doesn't go 5 times a week, it affects him, it mentally affects him. Mm-hmm. I, however, do not need to go 5 times a week. Or at all. But for him, that's a basic need for him. He has to go to the gym every day.
Yeah.
Whether that's at lunchtime because he's working from home or after school, whatever, that's fine. We'll work that in as the basic need ticked.
Yes.
Mine will be whatever else it is. I don't know what mine is really. And the kids have their clubs and their, you know, all that stuff. I think if you have a basic level that's agreed and ticked off, and everyone's happy with that, then you can layer on the different pieces of the jigsaw.
Yeah,
so generally works-ish for most people most of the time.
Absolutely. And I come back to expectations again for myself in this. I've had to lower my expectations because I wanted the full jigsaw and then I wanted to frame it, you know, and actually that's not possible either. So yeah, expectations is huge in there. But yeah, I agree with you. Yeah, it's fitting it all together.
Yeah, I think so.
The way that works best for you.
Yeah. And then can we talk briefly before we run out of time, because as someone who specializes in confidence building in women, I have talked a lot. In fact, I did a live in my Facebook group today about building confidence and how through some conversations I've had this week, natural confidence comes from passion, I think. Mm-hmm. And if you're passionate about something, you're naturally confident. If you're not as passionate about it, if it's a bit more of a mundane part of your life that you have to talk about or get involved with, then having some structure and framework to build that confidence around you can help. But you're an expert in confidence. So do you have, and again, I don't want to put you on the spot because I didn't say I was going to ask you this, but it just came to me as we talk about it. Do you have any top piece of advice for people who are really struggling? And often for me, or the people I talk to, it tends to be the new mums or the newer going back to work mums quite often who have just again lost their sense of identity, of feeling like they've missed out on all this professional time. You know, is there anything, any kind of strategies they can just start to implement quickly that can help boost that in the short term?
I would absolutely come back to what I was talking about before around values. I think that our values give us so much, and one thing that they can help us with is our confidence. And I think what can happen in lots of different situations, but what we can do when we start to lack feeling confident, so maybe going back to work and not feeling confident, we start to look at this huge thing in front of us as not having the confidence for. And in reality, when we look at returning to work after a long period of time, that is huge. It's humongous. And actually, we can't take that away. But what we can do is focus inwards, and we can focus inwards on our values. And from day one of walking into the office, if you go into the office, or from one day of working from home, from day one, you can decide to be intentional with your values. So if you can explore what your values are and say, you know, that one of your values is connection, is to be, or compassion or connection, you can meet the first people that you meet with compassion and with connection. And you can come out at the end of that day and know that you have acted in a line with your values. And then you can start to build your confidence on knowing that you are doing what matters most to you. And then the role and the speed that you type an email and, you know, pick something new up or learn the new system, all of that can come. But actually, it matters more that you act in line with your values in your role than the speed of which you do something.
It's not as tangible as just saying the role I was doing or the job I need to do. It's much more, as you say, value led and I suppose it's that intention that's so important.
Exactly,
isn't it? Because I suppose it's very easy, probably, and I'm sure you've had this, to do a values exercise or to have some coaching around values, and then you say, okay, that's great, these are my top values, right? And off you go.
Put them in a list somewhere.
Put them in a list, in a drawer,
or
in a, you know, folder somewhere, and it just gets forgotten. Because it has to be, doesn't it? It has to be intentional. It has to be a real conscious decision to live your life by those values.
Absolutely.
Then what if you don't? I suppose that's the thing. What if you know your values and you're comfortable with your values, you continue to, I suppose, push them to the back, because maybe you think you shouldn't be aligned to this. I don't know, maybe think you haven't got the confidence to actually present to yourself in line with those values for whatever reason.
How
can you bring them to the fore? How can you really set that intention and be confident in living your life with those values?
I think there's two factors to that, and I thought you were going to ask a different question, and I still feel the need to answer that question you were going to ask, so I'm going to answer that question. I think the question I thought you were going to ask, which I'm going to answer, is if you don't live aligned with your values, and maybe you do know what they are but you don't live by them, or you don't know what they are, what's the impact? And the impact is something that is referred to in psychology as cognitive dissonance. So when we have competing thoughts, for example, when we think two different things in our own heads, or when we act in a way that is different to what our values are, then we experience this discomfort within us. We can feel the pull in some way, whether it's in our chest, in our stomach, it's in our bodies, and we feel it. And that's kind of That's the space that we create. That's the ease and the flow that we create by exploring our values and living by them, because we can get rid of some of that discomfort that's within us. And when I say that out loud, it feels like it's obvious, but actually it isn't. I experience, we all, no matter how much we understand ourselves, we all experience cognitive dissonance. It's just the less you understand of yourself, the more you experience it. And we can do it unwittingly. You know, if you don't know what your values are, you can be acting outside of your values. So, for example, you know, I pick an easy one, honesty. If you value honesty and you're telling white lies here, there and everywhere to try and cope with your job, to try and keep up appearances, then you're going to be experiencing that cognitive dissonance without even realizing that it's because of your values. So that's the answer to the question you didn't ask.
That's a very good question that I asked.
Thanks for that question. So then the next step, or the next question that you actually did ask, around how can we be intentional around using our values? And I used to have mine. I don't think I have any more. I do. Look, as on my screensaver.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So I've got my values and I've got my strengths and so I've got that there to remind me when I come to make a decision. And it is about every morning, whether it's on your way into work or as it's turning your computer on, it's saying, what value am I going to focus on today?
Yeah.
And literally reminding yourself of it, whether that's a post-it note on your screen, or whether it's on your phone, or whether you send yourself a reminder that, you know, for 11 a.m. or something as well, to remind yourself of it. Yeah. But it's just having that one word in your head and being intentional with it and deciding. And if you want to go one step further, you can journal about it.
Yep.
And I would say write about it every evening.
Yep.
What values did I live by today? Mm. What values will I live by tomorrow?
Yeah.
It has to be constantly reminding yourself, whether it's telling your partner, telling your kids, telling yourself, you know, finding a way of just keeping your values at the forefront of your mind.
And then using it all the time. It's the flip side to what you just said about if you aren't living by your values, potentially unconsciously, and there's discomfort builds and builds, again, probably unconsciously.
Yeah.
And the discomfort becomes, it'll end up at a point where you can't cope with that discomfort, and it'll manifest itself in anxiety or depression or burnout or overwhelm, whatever it is. I suppose the flip side to that, the positive side, is the more you live by your values and the more you reiterate them and reinforce them and talk about them, it should just become second nature. And the whole process has becomes much more intuitive.
Yeah.
Much easier.
Yes.
And then it all flows from there. So I suppose it's that intention, sort of both ways, but being, as you say, reiterating it all the time and being really confident in those values.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, of course, we're only focusing on values here, but this is, you know, my whole coaching program is we start there, but then we want to raise your self-awareness so that, and your mindfulness, so that in every, not every moment, but in many moments throughout the day, you can see yourself and how you're being, and you can just know whether or not you're aligned with your values, and you know whether you need to make tweaks and changes. And you have this level of awareness that is exactly as you say, you know, it's getting, you're strengthening that muscle.
Yeah.
And it's becoming easier and you're becoming stronger at it. So that things just flow more easily, you know. There's a lot more ease to what you're doing because it's so aligned with who you are
Yeah.
And what matters most to you.
Which is what we all need. We all need more ease.
Absolutely.
And flow, generally, don't we?
So yeah.
A very good segue into, as you just mentioned it, your coaching program. So just before we wrap up, tell me a bit more about your coaching program and how people can find out about it. And also how people can find you more generally on LinkedIn or whatever it is.
Yeah, brilliant. Thank you. So I am on LinkedIn mostly. We do have Facebook and I do have Instagram, but I'm currently focusing all of my attention on LinkedIn. So if people would like to connect and they're on LinkedIn, that's the best place to connect with me. And yes, I have two programs. I have a one-to-one coaching program, which is me and you or me and whoever. And I do 8 sessions for that, and that costs £1,200 as a basic. And then you can find out more information through going to my website, which is Jen Smollett, which is 2 L's and 2 T's.com. So you can find out more information there. And then the second program that I have is a group coaching leadership, women's leadership program. It's called The Unstoppable Leader, because I believe that when we put all of these things in foundation, we can become unstoppable. In our lives as well as in our careers. So that is also, it's an 8 session program, but it's actually spaced out over 4 months. And the next one is starting in the beginning of February. And then they will run I'm going to run it starting every month. So if you want more information on that, you can also find that out on my website.
Because in case this episode goes out live in February,
there'll be another
cohort
at the beginning of March.
Perfect. And just final thought from you on Virgin Radio this morning, which I listen to every morning, and a guy like Chris Evans, that's my personal choice, and there's one day they were talking about leaders, because we're talking about Rishi Sunak and how it's kind of waiting in the wings to kind of take over potentially from Boris at some point. And he said he believes that leaders, you're just a born leader. So you can be an amazing manager, you can be an amazing mentor, amazing coach, an amazing team leader.
Mm-hmm.
But to be an actual leader of men, if you like, women, it's something that is just, you're just born with it. Do you believe that?
Ooh, big question for the end. Do I believe that? I believe possibly. I think it will come easier to you if you are a born leader. However, I do think that with these extra things, which are not leadership skills as such, but knowing yourself, knowing who you are, living your life aligned with yourself, I think that with that, if you can do that and you can raise your self-awareness, I think you can be a great leader with those skills. So I think it maybe will come easier if you're a born leader. But I'm going to put it out there and say, I think that you can learn the extras, which is what I teach. So maybe I'm biased in my answer. But I think you can learn the extras, which can allow you to be a good leader, a great leader.
Thank you.
What do you think? What do you think?
I think potentially sort of what you're saying. I'm, for example, I don't think I'm a born leader. I don't think I'm a great leader. Probably because I actually, if I was thinking about my values, I like to be more maybe in the thick of it. As I think back to my corporate career, I didn't want to be detached, feel like I was detached from anybody. So I wanted to be with everyone in a much more of a sort of flat structure. Maybe that's my perception. That leadership to me means you're detached, which I feel we have a whole discussion about that is right or wrong. And that because I suffer from confidence issues in a corporate setting, I didn't want to be the person at that board meeting having to talk to CEO. I just didn't, it filled me with absolute fear and dread of those kind of meetings. So in my view, you had to be able to do that and be confident to go and sit there in front of whoever. To be a great leader, and that's not me, and that's fine, that's okay. It's not personal choice. So I think people are definitely born with leadership qualities, which could be confidence, it could be, I think lots of great leaders don't really care what people think of them. So they don't care. I don't care what you think of me, I'm gonna go out and say it anyway. Do what I think is right, and you can disagree or agree, it doesn't matter. Whereas I think I take things quite personally. So I do care what people think of me, what, if I say something wrong or whatever. So
yeah.
I think you're right. I think you can be taught, you can grow your leadership qualities, absolutely. You can learn the right skills, you can be more self-aware and more self-confident. But yes, potentially, I think if you're born with that leadership potential, which maybe is a bit more kind of not caring as much as what people think and just driving forward regardless, maybe it's an easier road.
Mm-hmm. I think as well, you've added in an element there that is the choice. And maybe there's a link between if you're a born leader, you also would choose to be a leader.
Yeah.
And maybe if you're not a born leader, then maybe you wouldn't choose to be a leader, mm-hmm. in which case you wouldn't have the drive to develop those skills that a leader would need.
Yeah.
And if you do want to be, and you're not a born leader, you can learn the skills to get
that. Just to cover up all the bases there.
Exactly.
Cool. Well, thank you so much, Jen. It's an absolutely amazing conversation. Thank you. I knew it would be. And I'll put the links to your website and everything else in the show notes, episode links, so everyone can find you that way.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Have a great, calm January.
Thank you.
Don't feel guilty about having some downtime away from the kids. That's absolutely fine.
Yeah,
and I'll speak to you very soon, I'm sure.
Yeah, speak to you soon. Thank you so much. Bye.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of The Parent Equation. Please remember to subscribe, rate, and review, as every little really does help. You can find me at aishamurray.com or join my Facebook group, The Working Parent Equation, where you'll be part of a great community of like-minded parents, and you're most welcome. Until next time.